Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Speaking today with Peter Miller. Peter Miller is an independent filmmaker. He's had the opportunity to work on a number of very influential documentaries, radical films, both with Ken Burns, Barbara Koppel, and by himself. And most recently, he's produced The Internationale, a film about the socialist anthem that's been sung around the world for more than 100 years. Welcome, Peter.
It's nice to be here.
Peter, how did you become a filmmaker? I understand that right out of college, you had the wonderful opportunity to work on an Academy Award-winning documentary about a meatpacker strike. How'd that come about?
I came out of college and wanted to be an activist. I kind of wanted to change the world and figured that I would be organizing someone somewhere, and I wasn't quite sure how, and then found myself lucky enough to meet up with people who were doing their activism through documentary filmmaking. And when I was young and didn't have enough experience to really get it, I was given a job by a woman named Barbara Koppel, who had produced a film called Harlan County, USA, Once Upon a Time, which is a wonderful and kind of legendary documentary. And she was working on a film about the Hormel meatpacker strike in Minnesota that happened in the mid-1980s, in which meatpackers were standing up against the Reagan administration and standing up against the wage cuts that were going on in their industry. And it turned out to be a somewhat tragic film about the hopes and the dashed hopes of working people. And I worked with her for years and years, about 4 or 5 years, and ultimately American Dream was completed and won the Academy Award. And I had gotten the filmmaker's bug along the way, having worked with her, and subsequently was able to work on a number of other interesting films, mostly for public television, including a couple of projects that Ken Burns directed, the jazz series, which I co-produced, that was on public television this year, and a documentary biography of Frank Lloyd Wright. In the midst of it all, I've managed to be involved in independently producing some social issue documentaries, including a film about the Black Panthers, a falsely imprisoned Black Panther leader named Aruba Bin Wahad. The film was called Passing It On. It was shown on public television several years ago. And while working on jazz and while trying to raise a family and make a living, I also stumbled upon the subject of The Internationale, a story that I felt needed to be told. So spent on and off in the corners of my life and my free time, which there wasn't much of, managed to make this film over the past 7 years.
Now, as a radical filmmaker, there aren't very many venues for that kind of work in the public sphere. There's been a program on public television called Point of View, but do you think that the opportunities for radical film to be seen are opening or closing?
I think it's been getting worse since the beginning of time. I think it is very, very tough, but there are some hopeful signs. And POV, which was started, over a decade ago, is still going strong, showing independent social issue and personal and offbeat films on public television every summer. And I've been lucky that a few of the films I've worked on have been able to be shown on POV, including Passing It On, including The Uprising of 34, the Southern Labor History film. And it's good that it's out there, but there aren't enough shows on television that are willing to take creative risks and present alternative points of view on the air. And oftentimes, a filmmaker with a point of view, or a filmmaker who's making films that are outside of the mainstream, has to be very creative about how he or she finds an audience. One of the things that one needs to do is to realize that it's not just about showing it on TV, though that's wonderful and you reach millions of people. You can show a film in people's homes. You can show a film in community centers or in labor unions or in libraries or in schools or right now, the film The Uprising of 34 that I worked on, we did a project called Labor to Neighbor, in which we sent out tens of thousands of flyers announcing that the film would be shown on TV, but also announcing that the film was available. And people held house meetings at their homes and showed this film and had discussions, and we had sort of sent out suggested discussion starting questions. There are ways in which you can use films in a really interesting and grassroots sort of way. I have yet to find on the internet, you know, through the new technologies, a way of really reaching a lot of people. Though folks are talking about that as an option. I think good old fashioned organizing and small venues are one way to reach people. And there's a difference between showing a film in someone's home and showing a film in a theater and showing it on TV. When you show it in a place where the audience is there and is live, the lights go down, people experience the film together, and there's a certain special thing that happens. As much as I love to reach people on television, it's a different experience. People might be doing their ironing, or they might be, you know, going to the refrigerator or flipping channels or whatever. You don't quite have the same engagement with an audience on television.
I've gone several times to the website adamfilms.com, which has little 30-second to 10-minute films, and they're pretty good for one-off jokes, but they're not very good for telling coherent stories, and they're certainly not good for creating community.
Well, there's an intimacy that happens between, I mean, the point of a film, as far as I'm concerned, at least the films that I work on, is that they convey, in addition to information, a film conveys emotion and conveys people's lives. My boss and friend Ken Burns, who's a very talented filmmaker, calls himself an emotional archaeologist, and I subscribe to that as well. I think it's making a film is about drawing people into a story, drawing people into a feeling and into a mood, and kind of immersing your audience in the world that you're showing. It's hard to do that on a computer screen, especially with bad resolution and slow, you know, watching your computer buffer and do all those things that computers do. Though, on a positive note, The International, which is a film with a sort of activist message, is being excerpted and shown on a website of NikeWorkers.org, which is a website run by anti-sweatshop activists, and the organizer of that website had said that a lot of the student activists with whom he works don't have a sense of the heritage of struggle that came before the people who are currently doing the great work that they're doing, exposing the sweatshop conditions of Nike's employees around the world. And he thought that this film might be a good way of sort of introducing them to the people who came before them and the kind of historical context into which their movement fits. They're showing about 8 minutes from this half an hour documentary about the song The International on their website as excerpts to sort of do that. And that's a wonderful way of doing it, because you're plugging into a generation that does spend a lot of time in front of their computers. And there are definitely contexts in which I think you can use this technology to reach people. I just think that one can't put all one's eggs in one basket. There's a lot of different ways in which you can get to people. Right now, I'm traveling around at film festivals, and it's remarkable to be able to reach people in dozens of communities around the country who don't know the subject of my film and who come with an open mind and get to see it, and that's very exciting.
Let's take a moment to listen to the introduction to the film and the montage of different internationales and your interview with Pete Seeger, where he introduces it.
Now let's all sing The International.
The final conflict.
Who to eat the bacon?
Internationale. Ça va,
this is the original French of a famous socialist song, famous revolutionary song. The words were written in May 1871. Paris Commune had fallen. A man, I think he was in his 40s at the time, had been elected mayor of one of the districts of Paris, but now he was fleeing for his life. He was in hiding, Eugène Potier, I think that's how he pronounced his name. And that very month of May 1871, he writes six long verses and a chorus, calling on all the hard-working people of the entire world to overthrow their masters. And he was quite confident that they would, soon. A few years later, the book happens into the hands of a younger man, Pierre de Jeter. He led a chorus in his factory, and I'm told in a basement apartment on his pump organ, he made up a melody. This young musician had a hit song, at least in certain circles. It spread throughout France, it spread throughout Europe. They translated it in dozens of languages, maybe hundreds for all I know. It was sung all around the world, still is, by socialists, communists, anarchists. All sorts of people sing this song.
One of the things that's very impressive about your film is all the different international film clips and versions of the Internationale that you collected. Was that difficult to do? Is it difficult to find all that stuff?
Well, it's an unconventional subject, and it's not like you can go to some expert and say, tell me everyone around the world who knows about the Internationale or find me the film clips, because the story, being an international story, is located all over the world. So unlike a film, say, about about a textile strike in the South, you don't go and look for just the images of a particular historical event. Here's a film that takes place in the Philippines, in China, in the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s, in the Soviet Union, in all sorts of in America, of course, and all over the world, in Israel. The number of different places creates a real research challenge. And on top of the research challenge, there's the financial challenge. A film like this is very, very hard to fundraise for. This is not something where you have corporate funders or big foundations lining up to give money. It's a film about radical ideas, about a revolutionary song that advocates changing the world in fundamental ways that suggests that there is something worthwhile to be said by the ideals of the left, and the left is not in the strongest political position right now that it's been. It's never been easy to be on the left, but right now it's a real challenging time. So when you go out to try to find the money that you need to have people do your research with you, or to just make the phone calls or get on the plane or the train and go somewhere and find stuff, it's a real challenge. So this film was made for a budget about a 20th the size of a comparable film, like ones I've worked on for public television. And as a result, a lot of what came to me was provided as volunteer contributions by friends of mine who are filmmakers or just interested people. For instance, the Israeli kibbutznik who tells his story, he sent me his interview. I mean, I was emailing him about what I was doing, and I had heard from friends that he had wonderful things to say about the Internationale in his life. He said, tell you what, I'll arrange an interview for myself. And so what he did is he put a camera on a tripod and videotaped himself on his kibbutz and mailed it to me. And that interview is placed throughout the film, and he's a wonderfully articulate man. I couldn't go to Israel, and he couldn't come to America. I didn't have the money. Most of the people from around the world who are in the film, I filmed when they were in New York City, and I went as far away as Washington, D.C., but I couldn't travel around the world. Though friends of mine who are filmmakers would go on the road, and they'd say, Peter, I'm going off to Sweden next weekend. Anything you want me to do? And I'd say, yeah, there's a guy there who you should talk to, or please go to this archive. There's footage from Sweden. There's footage from Portugal that was sent to me by friends. Another man went to Croatia and filmed some stuff, and then somebody else went to a reunion of the Spanish Civil War veterans in Spain, and all these little clips that make up the various montages in the film, many of them were provided over the course of several years of work on this film by people I happened to know who went traveling.
That seems very appropriate to the nature of the film, that it was a collective nonprofit endeavor. I want to play a clip that was very affecting for me, a clip of this Filipino woman's story about the Internationale.
I woke up into this world and I knew the words of the song. It was sang to me actually like a lullaby. And I, you know, I was a baby. I didn't know the difference between Brahms' lullaby and the Internationale. And somehow I loved the Internationale better than Brahms' lullaby. My father's name is Juan Feleo, and he was a teacher. And he used to speak to the landlord in behalf of the farmers. And eventually, he had about 60,000 farmers who would come and listen to him and bring their grievances. But he was all by himself. And then he heard the Internationale. And then he decided that he would translate it into Filipino so that everybody would understand that there is hope, that there is a way out of this bondage, that there is a way for the farmers to organize and be heard. And I could not understand why my father was arrested and eventually killed for this song. But the song is a song that can be heard in the rice fields. Young boys riding atop their carabaos, going down the river, women washing clothes, farmers doing harvest. This song will be sung.
I'm speaking today with Peter Miller. He's an independent filmmaker, collaborator with Ken Burn on many of his projects, and the producer of a new film called The Internationale, which is about the socialist anthem that has been sung for more than 100 years by radicals around the world.
At least through the 20s, anarchists, socialists, and communists, and perhaps other trade unionists simply sang the International. But at some point, motion picture newsreels, and then ultimately television, began to show Red Army parades in Moscow. Somehow, in my mind, the International lost its early association of a general radical song and somehow became a Soviet song. And for people who reveled in the tanks in Red Square and the mausoleum and Lenin's tomb and the scowling Stalin, you know, the great father, I'm sure that the International was very stirring. But for non-communists, the International began to pick up a pejorative overtone.
One trouble of making something official, I think it's worse than banning it, it tends to cramp its style. It was sung briskly first, then they slowed it down to make it ponderous. Pum, pa-pum, pum, pa-pum, pump. It becomes very much an establishment kind of a song.
Since the song has taken on these Soviet associations over time, was it difficult to get former communists to talk about this song and their experience with it? It must be very melancholy for them to talk about it. And a lot of the folks who would have associations with the song before it became associated with communism are dead. So basically, communists are most of the folks that you'd be able to talk to about the song.
Right. I mean, this is a fundamental problem of any film one makes about history, which is that one wants to get to the witnesses while they're still around, while they're still alive, or while they can still sing. And indeed, the very first thing I did when starting this project, back in 1993, when I filmed my first interview with Pete Seeger, I thought, you know, Pete Seeger is going to be a wonderful part of this film, I'm sure of it, but I don't know how long he's going to be around or how long he'll be able to sing well. So we hurried up and went and did an interview with him, and of course he's still doing great and still singing beautifully and doing his thing these years later. But I didn't find a whole lot of reluctance from people to talk about their past, though what I did find was, and I entered this project with a sort of, with a somewhat rosy view of the song. I said, this is a song which I know expresses wonderful and high ideals, And it's a beautiful song with a lot of emotion that I know has been sung around the world in dozens of languages by radicals trying to build a better world. And I went to Pete Seeger and I said, you know, this expresses a kind of pure vision of a kind of ideals that I think are wonderful and should be heard about. And he said, you know, wait a minute, young man, let's watch out for anything that is pure or that calls itself pure. And then he quoted E.B. White, the writer and, you know, stylist, who said, strive for simplicity, but learn to distrust it. And then Pete went on to do this beautiful monologue, much of which appears in the film, about the complexities of this song and of the ideals that it represents. For a lot of people, the song represents not just the high ideals of kind of this of the struggle of working people to create a world without exploitation and to create socialism or communism or anarchism or whatever the political movement was, but rather the song expresses a certain kind of tragic complexity, the notion that this is a final conflict, which is the beginning of the chorus. Well, for a lot of people, they think that that's a bit simple, that the struggle is always going to go on and it's going to be more complicated than we think it will be. In addition, there's a lyric in the song, at least as it's translated into English from the original French, which is, no more traditions, chains shall bind us. And a couple of commentators in the film make reference to that and talk about the deeply ambivalent feelings that they have about the song.
Let's listen to Dorothy Healy talk about that.
I have an ambivalent feeling about the words of the song. On one hand, I still remain as moved as I was when I was a youngster emotionally by hearing a stirring call to fight, to struggle, to challenge. On the other hand, there's a sentence in that song, no more traditions, change shall bind us, that I had a kind of ironic double take on, because I felt one of the problems with the movement was that precisely traditions, chains had bound us, and that all too often concepts were accepted, went unchallenged, simply because it had always been accepted.
As communism began to fall, a lot of the people in former communist countries had this song in common as a song of struggle and a song of social justice, and they began to sing it in demonstrations calling for the downfall of communism and for the establishment of democracy. And in particular, you have some wonderful footage of Tiananmen Square students demonstrating and singing the Internationale together in Chinese. Billy Bragg has written new lyrics for the song. Do you think that the Internationale has a future? I mean, the sentiment of global solidarity against injustice, very much on the rise, given what's happening up in Quebec City as we speak and the anti-globalization movement.
It's a song which speaks to not just the struggle of working people to create a world where the people who create the wealth of the world get to control it and own it, but also it's a song which speaks to the international vision of such a movement, of a socialist or a communist or a movement of the left. It speaks to people from different countries recognizing that they have a common purpose with their brothers and sisters in other countries, that it's not just the kind of thing that if you're fighting against the landlord in the Philippines, you're not just part of that particular movement, or if you're a student at Tiananmen Square working against a communist regime, or if you're going to Quebec or to Seattle or wherever to fight against corporate globalization. All of this is part of an international movement in which people of good conscience and people of don't own the wealth of the world, though they may help to create it, people who can reach out their hands and say, look, we're all in this together, and this is if this movement is going to succeed, it has to be an international movement. Does that mean this song will be the anthem of the movement? I hope so, because it's a very beautiful song, and it's been around for over a century. It's been translated into dozens of languages, maybe hundreds of languages, and it's got deep history and deep emotion. Billy Bragg has rewritten some wonderful words for it. Are they the words that will stick for an English-speaking audience? I don't know, but I do know that the ideals that this song express are essential ideals if we're going to have a world that's worth living in.
Peter, where can people get a hold of the film?
The film is in distribution, and the company that distributes it is called First Run Icarus Films. They have a website, which is www.frif.com, or you can use the telephone and call them at 718-488-8900. And it's available to teachers, it's available to community groups, libraries, and before too long will be available on home video. Right now it's available to be shown in community and educational settings, and we are hoping that it becomes part of a dialogue that is engaged in all around the country and all around the world.
What are you working on next?
I'm developing a film about Sacco and Vanzetti, two Italian immigrants to America who in the early 1920s were accused of murder, which they probably did not commit, according to all people who have studied the case, but they were executed in 1927, and it was a cause celebre around the world. People really got very worked up about it because it represented all sorts of problems and contradictions in American life, and I think a lot of the issues that it brings up are issues that are still very much part of our life here today. So I'm trying to get that off the ground.
I've been speaking today with Peter Miller. He's the producer of many fine documentaries, a collaborator with Ken Burns, and the producer most recently of The Internationale, a documentary about the socialist anthem that's been sung around the world by radicals of many different persuasions. Thank you very much for joining us today, Peter.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Victims of oppression, for the tyrants fear your might. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing if you have no rights. Let racist ignorance be ended, for respect makes the empires fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended unless enjoyed by one and all. So my brothers and sisters, for the struggle carries on. The Internationale unites the world in song. So dawn and stand beside us. We'll live together or we'll die alone. In our world poisoned by exploitation, those who have taken, now they must give and end the vanity of nations. We hope one earth on which to live. Some of brothers and sisters, for the
you've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. You can also check out past and future shows, archived in streaming MP3, and myriad relevant links at the website www.changesurfer.com.